Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Really Bad Idea by Janine Collette, narrated by Mia Madison and Nelson Hobbs. 1. Meadow.
Earth to Meadow!
Angela snaps her fingers, pulling my attention over to where she's sitting behind the reception desk at Park Avenue Cardiology.
Baby fever?
She asks, without looking up from her computer. I glance down at the magazine I grabbed from the wicker basket in the waiting room.
Why do you always ask me that?
Because lately you get this dreamy stare when you see a cute baby. She lifts her head and points in the direction of the advertisement on the open page of the magazine. A baby with chubby cheeks and bright blue eyes is giggling.
And that baby is fucking adorable.
All babies are beautiful. She leans back in her swivel chair and gives me a dead stare.
No, they're not. Most look like constipated old men.
I open my mouth to argue, but it's really no use. The 7-year age gap between me and my coworker is a century in the world of life planning. While she's still busy flirting on Snapchat and getting picked up at music festivals on Roosevelt Island, I'm spending Friday nights on the couch with a glass of wine and a good book, while getting distracted at the sight of an advertisement. We'll agree to disagree. I toss the magazine back in the basket and take one of the open seats behind the reception desk. When I'm in between patients, I like to sit up here with Angela instead of being cooped up in the back office. Her fingers are drumming lightly on the desk as she raises a brow. I roll my eyes and concede. Okay, fine. My neighbor's baby does remind me of my great-uncle Leroy. She gives a cheeky grin.
I love it when I'm right.
With a shake of my head and a light laugh, I grab a stack of folders and open the top one, doing a quick once-over of the notes from a patient we've already seen today. As a nurse practitioner, I see non-urgent patients on my own and assist the cardiologist on the more severe cases. Angela pushes her foot against the filing cabinet and rolls in my direction. Her long black hair sways with the action.
Got any plans this weekend?
You know me, one hot date after the other. Despite my sarcastic tone, her feet dance with anticipation. I place a hand on her lap to control her legs and explain.
Calm yourself, Yang. I'm going to my brother's house.
Her excitement dwindles with the sag of her shoulders and a scowl on her lips.
Oh, that's not fun. What is the perfect family celebrating this time?
Brian and Beth are hosting my birthday dinner. She scoots back to her desk, grabs her vitamin water, and twists the cap.
But your birthday isn't until next week.
Apparently, everyone has plans next weekend. I shrug.
Do you think your mom will give you a pass from prying into your love life since it's your special day?
I let out a quick, heavy laugh. There's no get-out-of-jail-free card when it comes to Gail Duvain's unwanted, albeit well-intentioned, meddling. My 33rd birthday is ample time for her to remind me that I'm single and barren. Angela takes a gulp of her drink.
You can fake sick.
It's okay. I've been meaning to visit my nephews, and bonus, I get to raid Beth's closet.
Your sister-in-law has the best shoes.
She gets a dreamy stare in her eyes at my shoe blogger sister-in-law's ultimate collection of high-end footwear.
Too bad her foot is a size too small, I grimace. I'd cut off a toe to own her Saint Laurent monogrammed heeled boots.
They're so pretty. We both let out a sigh. One of the exam room doors opens, and Dr. Christian Gallagher comes out and walks up to the reception area. I gaze up to see him, thick, dark hair and piercing green eyes set on a ruggedly handsome face.
What are you two dreaming about? He asks.
Meadow wants a baby,
Angela declares. No, I don't, I argue, and sidestep the conversation, waving a hand in dismissal.
Well, I do, someday. But we were just talking about Yves Saint Laurent boots we're coveting. Christian laughs with a deep baritone, and it draws the attention of the other nurses on staff today.
Well, the baby thing I can't help you with, but I'm more than happy to fulfill your foot fetish fantasies.
One of the nurses lets out a giggle, which he ignores, as Angela chimes in.
They're $1,200.
He shrugs like this is a mere drop in the bucket.
I suppose it is when you're a cardiothoracic surgeon. Meadows' birthday is around the corner.
I lower my forehead and glare at him through scolding eyes. You are not buying me $1,200 shoes for my birthday. Angela lets out the same dreamy sigh she had before, but this time she's looking up at Christian.
I wish I had a best friend like you.
He winks, and her cheeks redden as I go back to my paperwork. The exam room door opens again, and a patient exits.
All set, Mr. Thompson?
Christian asks, leaning his elbow on the counter. His white doctor's coat is open, showing off a pinstripe button-down and cobalt tie.
Thanks, Doc. I can't believe 2 months ago I was in critical heart failure, and now I'm standing here with you.
Mr. Thompson puffs his chest out like he's king of the world.
That's the miracle of surgery. I want you to follow up with my father in a few weeks, and I'd like to see you again in another 4 weeks to make sure that valve is strong,
Christian advises as Angela hands him a follow-up card.
A father and son team, cardiologist and heart surgeon. There must be something in the Gallagher water.
Mr. Thompson jokes as he grabs his coat from the rack and then tips his hat before walking out the front door and onto the streets of Manhattan.
That's your last patient of the day!
Angela throws her arms up in celebration.
Thank God. Penn Station is a nightmare,
Christian says, loosening his tie and undoing the top button, revealing the Yankees t-shirt underneath. He secured box seats for tonight's Mets-Yankees game and asked Angela to clear his afternoon. He runs his fingers through the dark strands of his hair as he makes his final notes on a patient's chart. Angela stands up and lifts her scrubs. It looks like she's going to flash him when, really, she's proudly displaying her own Yankees t-shirt she bedazzled with pink rhinestones.
I came prepared in case your plus one cancels.
He shakes his head and grins, his eyes still focused on what he's writing.
If I'm going to take anyone, it'll be Meadow.
Me?
I ask incredulously.
Her?
Angela mimics my tone.
She hates baseball.
I twist in my seat. I don't hate baseball. She leans back with a sachet of her body and motions toward her shirt.
You certainly don't bedazzle the shit out of your shirts for it.
Touché, I concede, and then turn back to my own notes. Christian laughs, that deep vibrato sending a hum into my chest. He hands Angela the folder to file away and then turns to me.
Ticket's yours if you want it.
I look up to see him staring at me with mischievously grinning eyes.
I thought your dad was going?
I ask. Christian and I have been friends too long for me to know there is no way his father, Dr. Thomas Gallagher, would pass up a chance to see his beloved Boys in Blue play.
He is, but if I tell him I'm taking you instead, he'll understand.
I cross my arms and raise a brow. To a Subway Series game? I don't believe it. He chuckles, his dimples highlighting his rugged grin.
What can I say? The old man loves you.
The senior Gallagher has been playing matchmaker with me and Christian since we were 10 and our parents had us enrolled at tennis camp. My parents were no better, constantly dropping hints about Christian and his accomplished physician family. While they were never able to get us to date, they did help us forge a friendship that has spanned over 20 years. Enjoy a boys' night. Noticing the time, I give him a shoo. You're ahead of schedule, so take advantage. It's the first afternoon you've taken off in a year. Are you saying I'm a workaholic? He teases, knowing full well he's addicted to his field of medicine. With an outstretched arm, I point him toward his office. Get dressed and grab a drink with your dad before the game. He looks at me for a beat before letting out a breath and dropping his shoulders.
All right. You sure? I'd much prefer to have a beautiful blonde by my side.
I'm positive. I have a good book and a long bath planned. He lets out a groan before walking toward his office when Angela hits me in the arm. I'm rubbing the sore spot on my bicep as she says,
"That man was totally asking you out."
I curve my brow at her and go back to reviewing an echocardiogram from earlier today. He did not ask me out on a date. He asked me to a game as friends. We passed the era of possibility a long time ago. Besides, he's a 33-year-old bachelor who can have any woman in the city. He's at the onset of a 3-year fellowship, hoping to become the greatest heart valve replacement surgeon in the world. What the hell would he want my baggage for?
You don't have baggage.
I stop what I'm doing to swivel toward her, lower my forehead, and give her a deadpan look. I can load an airplane with the amount of bags I have packed. She raises a shoulder in mock agreement.
Okay, fine. You have a carry-on worth of shit, but you're a sexy single woman who happens to be crazy smart and has a killer body that spikes half the patient's blood pressure when they see that fine ass. You should work those curves underneath the scrubs. Don't hide because of one failed relationship.
I balk at her insinuation. While I want to argue with these points, I choose to simply remark on the main one. Christian and I are just friends.
He flirts with you all the time.
He flirts with everyone. She sways her finger.
He doesn't flirt with me.
I open my mouth to correct her before realizing she's right.
We're just friends.
Friends make the best lovers.
Stop it, Angela. I sing-song my annoyance.
I'm stopping, Meadow,
she sings back, just as Christian walks out of the hallway that leads to the back offices. He changed into jeans, his Yankees t-shirt, and a baseball cap. He slides on his brown bomber jacket, which accentuates his broad shoulders, as he heads out the door with a wave, leaving the lingering woodsy scent of his cologne in the waiting room.
Can you at least admit he's fucking hot? She says, with a hand on her hip.
I dramatically place my stack of folders on the desk in front of her and rise, heading toward the exam rooms for my evening lineup of patients. Park Avenue Cardiology is a boutique practice that looks more like a hotel than a doctor's office. With light walls, soft brown leather couches, and a coffee station in the waiting room, our patients wait for their next appointment in comfort. As Thomas likes to say, the key to living a healthy life is to reduce stress, and no one has ever calmed down in an uncomfortable chair. Even our exam rooms look more like suites with crisp white beds, walnut furniture, and textured wallpaper. We have a top-notch computer system and state-of-the-art equipment to ensure every patient gets the best care. As soon as I graduated with my master's in nursing, I came to work with Thomas at his practice. While he's dwindled down his office hours to just 3 days a week as a cardiologist, Christian has been working round the clock as a surgeon. Christian came on board a year and a half ago after finishing his 5-year general surgery residency in San Francisco and earned a fellowship at the St. Xavier Heart Institute here in Manhattan. He performs surgery out of the hospital and sees his patients for follow-up visits here at his dad's office once a week. Those days, like today, are my favorite. I busy myself for the next few hours, seeing patients on behalf of Thomas and assisting the other cardiologists on staff. By 7 o'clock, I've seen 20 patients, taken or ordered a variety of EKGs, TEEs, MRIs, pretty much every test with a 3-letter acronym, and spoken at length about the importance of a good diet and exercise. And now I am ready to head home.
"Let's do drinks tonight," Angela calls out as I walk to the front door, wrapping my lightweight scarf around my neck.
"Date with my bathtub, remember?" I respond as I zip up my jacket.
"You're so lame."
I give her a backward wave as I head out the door. Since it's still light out and the weather is mild, I head down 74th Street, cross Fifth Avenue, and go into Central Park. My apartment is on the opposite side of town, so I like to walk across the park and stop for a moment at Bethesda Fountain. With its bronze angel statue at the top, with her outstretched arms, the iconic fountain beckons me. For years, I've tossed a coin in the water and made countless wishes. I've always believed in wishes, good luck charms, and totems. It started when I was a kid and carried on to when I moved to Manhattan and made my first wish at this fountain. I had just returned from visiting Christian and medical school in San Francisco. I know it seems silly, but I put a lot of hope in my wishes. Maybe one day my greatest wish will come true. I take a penny out of my purse, hold it up, and listen to the sound of water falling and the soft chatter of tourists.
"Splash!"
a tiny voice yelps. A little boy is sitting on his mother's lap, leaning into the fountain and slapping the water, making it spray all over his father sitting next to them.
"Splash, Daddy!"
Instead of being mad, like I assume some parents would be, the man seems to find his son amusing and laughs as he continues to get sprayed on.
"Come here, you little rug rat,"
the man exclaims as he grabs his boy, picks him up high, and then lowers him down for a kiss on the cheek. The little boy squeals, and his mother looks like her heart is about to burst with love at the sight of her son giggling in happiness. I hold the coin in my hand up to my chest, close my eyes, say a silent wish, and toss it into the fountain before continuing my walk through the park. Central Park in the spring is beautiful, with the cherry blossom trees at the earliest onset of their flourish and the tulips creeping through the earth. I inhale the sweet fragrance and fresh air. When I'm in my neighborhood, I stop at the corner market and grab a few groceries before arriving at my apartment building. My doorman, Salvatore, is quick to greet me.
"Good evening, Ms. Duvain."
"I have something for you." I motion with my chin to a box at the top of one of my brown bags. He sees the package of Good and Plenty peeking out the top and smiles.
"Always thinking of me."
Whenever I go to the grocery store, I get him his favorite candy. It's the least I can do for the kind old man who always makes me feel safe and welcome. "How's Carol?" I ask, referring to his wife as he takes the candy from the bag. "Did she get her stomach checked out?"
"Yes, ma'am. You were right about it being an ulcer. Doctor has her on an antibiotic, and he's helping her get rid of the acid."
"So happy to hear. Give her my best." I walk into the elevator that Salvatore already pushed the call button for. When I'm on my floor, I juggle my grocery bags as I fiddle with the key ring. I let myself inside my apartment, close the front door with my foot, and place my groceries on the counter. Living alone has taken some getting used to. When I got married 8 years ago, it was for better or for worse, except no one told me "for worse" included my husband cheating on me with a puck bunny. Brock Lannister is a defenseman for the New York Islanders and my now ex-husband. When we met at a bar on Bleecker Street, I knew absolutely nothing about hockey, let alone who was on the roster for the Islanders. He was handsome as hell, told the best jokes, and was romantically spontaneous. Many times I'd get off a shift to find him waiting on the curb with a bottle of wine, two glasses, and a limo ready. He'd say,
"Where do you want to go? Just pick a place and we'll vanish."
We'd choose sleepy towns within driving distance, stay in bed and breakfasts, make love all weekend, and come home in the same clothes we left in. If we ever dared to venture out, it was in tourist t-shirts and silly woven hats or anything we could get our hands on. He never cared if I took an extra shift, and I wasn't one of those women who gave him hell about all his fangirls hanging around after his games. Although, looking back, I definitely should have. We only dated for a year before getting married, and then we bought this apartment. I love this apartment. It has two bedrooms, an all-white open kitchen, which is scarce in the city, and a living room with a view of Central Park. It's not huge, but it's cozy and perfect, and the place I call home. When I caught Brock in bed with another woman, he knew from the look on my face that it was over. His main concern was that we hadn't signed a prenuptial agreement, and he'd recently negotiated an $8 million contract with the team. I didn't want a dime of it, just my home. So yeah, it's been an interesting 2 years. With my dish of ravioli in hand and a glass of Pinot Noir, I cuddle up on the sofa and enjoy my dinner. I'm only about 2 bites in when my cell phone rings. Christian's Facebook picture appears on the screen. It's him in a wet white t-shirt taken on his father's boat last year. The way his broad chest is on full display through the sheer fabric sends a quiver through me every time I see it, and I remind myself for the 100th time to change his ridiculous picture on my phone. I answer the call. "You're supposed to be drinking beer and yelling at the umpire." His throaty chuckle is loud, despite the crowd cheering in the background. "Turn on the TV. I'm behind home plate and waving to you." The remote is on the arm of the couch when I grab it. I turn on the television and flip through the channels. "How am I supposed to know where you are?" "Just turn it on." The game is on Fox, with a wide shot of the field, showing two runners on base. The camera stays on the handsome faces of the ball players, and I'm not one to argue with that. "I don't see your ugly mug, but hello, Giancarlo Stanton, you handsome devil, you. Do you think he's single? Are you trying to break my heart?" I giggle as I watch the camera switch to the home plate view, as a new player walks up to bat. Okay, I'm looking behind home plate. I don't see... I pause as my eye catches something bright pink in the stands, just to the right of the batter. I squint in recognition. "Are you wearing a neon fishing hat?" Now knowing the camera is on him, Christian waves from his seat. He's already an imposing man with his strong build and naturally tan skin, but with the fluorescent pink hat on his head, he is downright ridiculous. "I lost a bet with my dad, and now I have to wear this the entire game." "Why is it pink? And why aren't they kicking you out for distracting the pitcher?" "It's my mom's. The old man knew what he was doing when he wagered wearing a hat to the game as the ante." "He's a sucker," Thomas says into the phone from his seat next to Christian. I scrunch my nose in confusion. What was the bet? Christian pauses as the crowd around him cheers for a base hit. When the celebration dies down, he answers that the center field line at Citi Field is exactly the same as Yankee Stadium. "He totally fooled you into that bet," I say, and take a bite of ravioli. The view on the television screen goes back to the batter's box. I can see Christian hunched to the side of his seat, his finger in his ear as he talks on the phone. "What are you doing right now?" he asks. "Enjoying dinner while watching you talk on the phone in a ridiculous hat from the most high-profile seat at Citi Field. And then I'm hopping into a warm bath." "Want company?" "You're crude." I take a sip of my Pinot. He leans back with a laugh. "Usually, when a woman tells me she's about to get naked, it's an invitation to come over." "Not with that hat you're wearing. Besides, I'm not one of your usual women." There's a slight pause on his end. "That you're not." There's another round of cheers and jeers as the Yankees batter hits a pop-up to the Mets' second baseman. But seriously, want company? I can swing by after the game.
Thanks, but no thanks. I let out a loud yawn. I'm crashing early tonight. My boss is a slave driver.
Imagine being raised by him, he shouts over the music playing in the background as the players switch positions on the field. I laugh at his joke, mostly because I know they have a great relationship. Yes, his father demands a lot of his son, as most successful men do. They also have a rapport that only comes when two men genuinely get along. Enjoy your game, Christian.
I can't see him, but I can feel his warm grin through the phone.
Sweet dreams, Meadow.
We hang up, and I'm not surprised to feel a smile on my face. Despite a very messy divorce, I've come out on top, mostly because of Christian. When I found out Brock was having an affair, scratch that, multiple affairs, I was a mess of tears, and Christian took the red eye from San Francisco and showed up at my door with a bottle of Johnny Walker and two shot glasses. When Brock had to pack up his stuff, it was Christian who booked me a day at the spa while he stayed here and watched Brock move his shit. And every time we go to a sports bar and the Islanders are playing, Christian slips the bartender $100 to make sure the TV in my section is playing anything but hockey. My hand rises to my clavicle and the wishbone charm Christian got me as a wedding gift. It was an odd choice for a present, as he got nothing for Brock, but it's my favorite, and I wear it every day. I can see why Angela would say Christian and I should be a couple. He's the best man I've ever known. But what we have is too valuable to risk. Besides, what I need and what Christian wants are two very different things. So very, very different. 2.
Hit B! Hit B! My nephew Aiden shouts in my ear.
His tiny 6-year-old body nearly falls into me as he jumps on the couch. It's hard to steer and press the buttons. I careen to the right, and my Luigi avatar, riding a pretty sweet-looking motorcycle, crashes into the side of Princess Peach's castle. My other nephew Dylan looks cool and confident. We're in a one-on-one battle to see who can place higher in Mario Kart. So far, I'm losing badly to a 10-year-old.
Come on, Aunt Meadow. Drive into the question mark. Maybe you'll get the bullet and it'll zoom you up to third place, Aiden yelps.
Dylan's hands are firm with confidence on the steering wheel controller. His steely gray eyes he inherited from my brother are narrowed in focus.
It's a given. You always get the bullet when you're in last place, Dylan predicts.
My motorcycle is back on track as I navigate through the race, and just like the boys said, I get the magic bullet, which zips me through the course and past Toad, Bowser, Baby Luigi, and Wario. Dylan crosses the finish line first, and his Mario avatar cheers in rejoice. I'm far behind. 5th place, I state, disappointed. That stinks.
Winner!
Dylan cheers for himself, his hands up in the air as he chants his own name.
You're terrible at this game, Aunt Meadow.
Am not, I defend. Aiden agrees with his older brother as he leans on my shoulder and says,
You get beat by a kid every time.
I tap him on the nose. You're lucky you're cute. He smiles a toothless grin from having just lost his 2 front teeth.
Or what?
Raising my fingers, I wiggle them in the air and reach out to him.
Or I'll tickle you to death.
I lunge for his tummy and tickle up and down the sides of his torso, causing him to laugh while curling his legs in and rolling over. Not letting up, I keep my hands moving as his brown hair flops about, the smile on his face grows bigger, and his laughs get louder. The sound of footsteps coming down the stairs announces Beth's entrance. She's dressed like the quintessential upper-class suburban mom, with her shoulder-length blonde hair pulled back in a low ponytail.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?